ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
First victory of the year on the line. Goff's got it. Back, looks, throws, ends up.
Yes!
Caught! Touchdown, Detroit Lions! They did it! Amon-Ra St. Brown, the receiving end! Oh, they're rushing the field!
That is the sound of a national nightmare finally ending. Because the Detroit Lions, yes, have won a football game, and in an almost perversely beautiful fashion at that. So our Monday morning quarterback, Alex Smith, tells us what he saw out in Michigan and around the entire league in Week 13. And then Lewis Riddick in Buffalo previews the best game of the entire football season. Patriots Bills. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, December 6th. This is ESPN Daily. Alex Smith, it is 11:33 p.m. Eastern. We just watched the Chiefs beat the Broncos 22-9. Do you recognize these Chiefs? I mean, this is not what I was sold when I started complaining about this team like 5 or so weeks ago.
I mean, it's funny, you know, when the Chiefs were on their kind of losing streak and turning the ball over and everybody's wondering what's going on, what's their deal. And here they're on a 5-game winning streak, you know, which they've said, I couldn't believe Andy's done every single year in Kansas City, which is amazing. 5-game winning streak. And yeah, you know, you leave it and you're still like, well, where's the big plays? Where's the offense? I think this was a season low in both yards and plays for the Chiefs. So very uncharacteristic, but they didn't really have to. There was no need. This defense has been playing unbelievable to go from historically bad. I mean, at a decent point into the season, that was like week 6 or 7 at some point, we were talking about how historically bad they are. They're on a 5-game win streak, and it's because of their defense. Over those 5 games, they are averaging 11 points a game. They're giving up 11 points a game. Over the last 4, it's under 10.
No one has a streak like this in the NFL this season. 5 straight wins, fewer than 20 points in each of them. And they've been beating. Let's just run through it, right? I mean, the Giants, sure, to start this thing off, but then they hold the Packers to 7, the Raiders to 14, the Cowboys to 9, and now the Broncos to 9. I mean, all of this is sort of mind-blowing, let's be honest.
No, it is. I think this makes them more dangerous come postseason. Mm. I think the fact that their defense is playing this good right now is a great sign in an AFC, like we said, that is untrustworthy except for a couple teams. And they've got the firepower on offense. They didn't have to do anything, and they still won. They still beat a really good Denver team tonight. I mean, Kelsey had 3 catches. Tyreek had 2. I mean, they kind of were asleep on offense and still came out with a pretty commanding win. But this defense is I've never seen a turnaround quite like this in one season.
Well, it's because this defense, Alex, is putting like 20-play drives to sleep. The Broncos had a 20-play drive that resulted in 0 points, which is a thing that we only see like once every few years in this sport.
It is. It is. Yep, it is. And the reason it happened is the Broncos went for 3 fourth downs on that drive, but they had to because they're terrified because Patrick Mahomes is on the other sideline. So they're terrified they can't kick field goals. I mean, 3 times they walked away with no points on that, literally having to go for it inside the 10 because you know, in your mindset, you can't kick field goals against him. You're going to lose. So he almost puts that pressure on you. But yeah, I mean, I they have the firepower.
No, Alex, it's terrifying what the Chiefs are doing. It's absolutely, it's panic-inducing if this offense ever resembles anything like what it normally does and this defense remains at this pace. But I want to spin around to the real game of the day. For some in the state of Michigan, it is the game of a lifetime because anyone who said the Detroit Lions, Alex Smith, could go 365 days without a win, they were sorely mistaken. How dare you suggest that? Because it only lasted, it turns out, 364 days. The Detroit Lions have officially done it.
Touchdown, Detroit Lions, and these cardiac kitties
have beaten the Minnesota Vikings and won a game for the first time in 364 days.
And this scene, man, was a mixture of both like absurdist comic relief, but also like a genuinely touching emotional wavelength, because head coach Dan Campbell, he dedicates the game ball to the Oxford, Michigan community that suffered that horrific school shooting last week.
First thing I'm going to start with, this game ball goes to the whole Oxford community. All those were affected.
This is about football. It's obviously about more than that, too. Whenever you get this kind of catharsis from it.
Yep.
You've been on teams that have struggled not like this. I just wonder what you felt watching this whole thing play out.
To watch the end of this game and to know that, like you said, tragic is an understatement what happened this week, but to watch all year the Detroit Lions and how close they have been to victory, and to know how much they do not want to be the first team to go winless in a 17 game schedule. They are professionals. These guys sacrifice a ton. Everybody in that organization that is putting in the time, their families included, the sacrifice for this. And they you know, every week go out there and toe the line. And it's hard. And they've come so close so many times this year. And to be honest, I thought it was over. I looked at their schedule and I didn't think they had a chance to win a game. I thought, this is it. They're going to go 0-16-1.
So did I.
And to pull out the win they did today, and to do it how they did in complete Lions character, to go from literally just giving the game away and then to come back and claw it back and to win it in walk-off fashion. I mean, it was pure joy to watch. You couldn't help but smile if you're a sports fan, to see them go absolutely nuts, to kind of to really get that monkey off their back and to just enjoy that moment is why sports is amazing. But I mean, I honestly, it was a bit of a car wreck, if I had to be honest.
No, it is.
First of all, I didn't know this was possible, but this is the first time the Lions scored 20 points since week one, Pablo.
Oh, wow. I did not know that until just now.
And they actually hit it at halftime today, which was a good sign for them. But they were kind of in control of this game for virtually all of it. And into the fourth quarter, they almost gave it away. Jared Goff threw a really, really bad interception. And their defense held them in the fourth quarter. The Lions defense buckled down and held them, and they still had the lead. And then they're up two. Fast forward, 4 minutes left. And the Lions have the ball, and they decide, Dan Campbell decides to go for it on his own 28. He's up two with
Man
4 minutes
Campbell,
left.
Man Campbell. That's right.
I'm not sure if he was even looking at the scoreboard right. Like, I don't know if he knew he had a lead, but he had the lead, and he basically gift wrapped it away to the Vikings. He decides to go for it on fourth and one from his own 28. They ran some kind of roll pass. It was a disaster. Didn't have a chance. It was a sack fumble. I mean, you gave the Vikings the game-winning field goal on a plate, and then they marched down and scored. They end up going up by five. I thought the game was over. I couldn't believe what I just watched. And then Jared Goff marches them down, and at the 11 hits the game winner on the last play, and the entire place went bananas, and good for them. I mean, it was amazing to watch. I didn't think they had a chance, and to pull it out, man, I know they have to be feeling good, and good for them, rightfully so.
No, I mean, you just quoted inadvertently Jack Buck calling that Kirk Gibson home run. I don't believe what I just saw to characterize what felt honestly like a championship. I mean, let's be real about this. Why is sports great? It's because a win, a first win of the season on December 5th, can be, per all of these videos that I've now seen come out of this game in the locker room and otherwise, Alex, it seemed the way they like sprayed water on each other and genuinely just had these massive smiles. It felt like something close to a Super Bowl, which is something that only comes through suffering. And now let's be honest here too, right? The suffering in the other part of that stadium, my Lord, the Minnesota Vikings, like, let's run through some of their season. We've been on this all year, you and me just laughing at this. But week one, they lose on a walk-off field goal in overtime. Week two, they lose on a missed field goal. add in a couple more really close shaves. You get to week 8, lose on a touchdown with less than a minute left. Week 9, lose on a walk-off field goal in overtime. Week 13, congratulations, you're the thing that prevented the Detroit Lions from being the first 0-16-1 team in NFL history.
Yeah, just add that to the year for the Vikings, because that's what they'll get remembered at this point. You know, they lost a nail biter with the Niners and kind of fell out of the wild card race, and then to lose to the Lions the following week. I feel bad for them. I feel really bad. They've led by 7 points, Pablo, at some point in every single game this year. So they've led every single game, and yet they have a losing record. I saw a crazy stat in the fourth quarter as they were trying to mount a comeback. Kirk Cousins in the fourth quarter is 27-1 with a lead. He is 2-25 when trailing. So he has this huge, this has kind of been his MO. He hasn't been able to get a comeback. And then Dan Campbell tries to hand it to him. And I thought, well, like, man, if there's a, you know, if you're in a slump and you're looking to get out, just play the Lions. And that's kind of what I was thinking. And no, he's 2-26 now, Pablo.
Correct.
When trailing in the fourth. So,
how dare we?
I know.
How dare we have ever doubted Dan Campbell, a visionary?
Yep. I think, again, and when you go 15 games in a row losing like that, week in and week out, and your coaches are preaching the same thing, and you're hearing these speeches, and everybody's trying to cheer each other up, but you stop believing it at some point. You know, it's hard. It's hard to buy in and to change, to the culture change, to you know, going out there and being a part of that team and that organization. And again, great for them for going out and, despite all that, finding a way to get a W.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Alex, after the break, let's get to a couple of other teams with real live futures, like sincerely bright futures, that their fan bases should really feel good about believing in.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Alex, we got to start here in Pittsburgh because Lamar Jackson leads the Ravens, who, by the way, were leading the whole AFC at this point. He leads them 60 yards down the field in less than 2 minutes to get an extra point away from tying the game against the Steelers 20-20. But John Harbaugh, his head coach, decides to go for two.
Lamar Jackson, shotgun snap, fakes the handoff, slings the left side, off the hand of Andrews. He was wide open on the right flat at the goal line, and the Steelers are going to win the football game.
What did you see on that play call, the one that ended up losing this game for the Ravens?
I felt like as that drive started, I was thinking the same thing probably a lot of people were thinking, that it had been another ugly game for the Ravens. You know, off the 4-interception performance last week from Lamar. And
yes,
they really hadn't shown much to be excited about this game either. And it was another kind of ugly AFC North game that I think we've all grown accustomed to seeing. But I'm kind of wondering, here they got their chance. Lamar's got his chance to prove that, you know, I think he's, you know, he's dispelled this whole notion that he can't come from behind. I think he has 5 fourth quarter comebacks or second half comebacks this year already. And here he's got his chance, and kind of marches them right down the field and they score. And, you know, just the head coach and me, I thought all the momentum was on their side. I know they're on the road and analytics and numbers and all this. I thought they should have kicked the field goal. I thought they would have won the game in overtime. I thought they were clearly the better football team, but they decided to go for two, not my call, which we've seen the Ravens do consistently this year. They consistently.
Yes, Harbaugh does this.
Yes, he's going for it. And I loved the play design. You know, in this kind of scenario at the 2 yard line, that's usually what you get out of defense is you either get all out blitz or all coverage, like drop eight, they drop everybody in the end zone and try and, you know, take away all the windows. Well, you know, of course the Steelers and Tomlin, they roll the dice, bring everybody. So they're running a little, Baltimore's running a little like play action kind of fake run. And they're it looks like they're going to try and boot Lamar out, and they're sliding Mark Andrews behind the line of scrimmage into the flat, and he's wide open. It's a great coverage, except obviously there's pressure coming, and who is it? It's TJ Watt, untouched off the edge, as Lamar's kind of faking this gun run, waiting. You know, you kind of have to buy some time. You're literally trying to wait so Mark Andrews can get out there and get open, and he's wide open.
It's such a delicate dance, right? Just like trying to time it out.
Yeah, at this point, TJ Watt is breathing down Lamar's neck, you know, and Lamar does, I mean, it's not an easy throw. I mean, he literally, you know, kind of jumping and faking TJ Watt out at the exact same time and trying to hit a moving target. As Mark Andrews is kind of coming across, he's just barely turning around himself. This all happens, you know, this is a bang, bang play. And it literally goes off Mark Andrews' fingertips. Like, I think we've seen him. We talked about him making miraculous catches. I think he, that same pass tomorrow night, he makes the catch, you know. Yep. But tonight he dropped it. And you know, fittingly, so many of these Ravens-Steelers games, you know, between Tomlin and Harbaugh have come down to plays like this, one or two plays. This one, didn't disappoint in the drama coming down to the end. They decided to roll the dice and obviously paid the consequences, but they have another game with them at the end of the season, and that entire division, every single team is above 500 still. It's week 13.
It's absurd what that division looks like on paper. The entire AFC, let's get to the rest of it here, because it's all very much up in the air. I mean, we just had another showdown between two other playoff teams, Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, the Chargers and the Bengals, the Chargers beating the Bengals 41-22. And this was back and forth until the fourth quarter when the Chargers pulled away. What did you learn from this game?
You know, we've been talking a ton about these rookie QBs all year. And here we have these two sophomore QBs, yep, so to speak, going head to head. And these two guys, Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, have so quickly established themselves as franchise QBs. It really is impressive, you know, to think about the rookie class that we talk about that really struggling besides Mac Jones. And here are these two that were in this exact situation a year ago. And I don't think there's any question that these two guys are going to be playing great football for a lot of years to come.
No, the Bengals, Alex, it's worth noting, right? As the AFC North becomes whatever the hell it is right now, the Bengals are suddenly like a playoff team. Like, that's just a thing we just take for granted almost.
Yeah, a playoff team and maybe the most untrustworthy team in the AFC. Like,
I mean, also that.
They crushed the Ravens, you know, several weeks back, and we're like, obviously everybody's praising them and how great they are. And then the following week, they lose to the Jets. And then, you know, last week they pounded the Steelers. And again, I mean, we're all praising them. And then, you know, today, obviously, I didn't totally show up.
There are a couple of throws I want to break down with you here, Alex, as a guy who did this job for a long time in the NFL. The first throw I want to ask you about was this 44-yard touchdown pass from Justin Herbert that really was a lot longer than 44 yards, right? Because of the angle on this, it was diagonal from right to left across the field. Just explain how difficult a throw this is to make and what it tells you about the guy making it.
This is like the old throwback bomb, you know, kind of off of Madden. So they're in shotgun. They're in like 2x2, and Herbert does another little kind of run fake to the running back and boots out to his right, almost all the way out, you know, close to the numbers. And it really feels, the entire flow of the offense really feels like, obviously, it's kind of a naked bootleg like we see, you know, going out to the right side. And he sets up and heaves this ball back to the far left corner of the end zone.
Fake the handoff. Herbert's got time. Herbert, end zone. Battle caught.
Justin Herbert, a howitzer of an arm.
Man, Herbert trusts his guy and just puts this thing up there. And it is hanging up there, and it's just those two. They're the only two guys on that entire side of the field. I mean, there's no one else in the picture. And they both go up, and it almost appears that they both literally catch it at the exact same time in the end zone and come down. And, man, Guyton basically wrestled it away from him into the end zone for the score. It was cool to see. And, again, Herbert did it several times today, really kind of trusting his guys to make plays, giving them the chance in one-on-one situations. And this was a big one to see, you know, obviously for a big, big score in the game. But, yeah, unique play. Not many guys have the arm strength to even do that.
That's what I mean.
I'm not sure they're calling that play if I was in there, Pablo. but obviously Herbert got a cannon and showed it off on that play. But it was fun to see. And his guys made plays for him today, but it definitely was a battle.
Yeah, yeah. I will refrain from laughing even harder than I wanted to, Alex, at the idea of you attempting that. But I want to ask you about the second throw here from this game that really jumped out to me, which was Joe Burrow's. And this wasn't recorded as a completion or a touchdown, even though it looked like it was absolutely going to be both of those things.
Burrow, downfield, Chase bobbles, intercepted. Chase thought he had a touchdown, and instead it's a turnover.
But Chase, I want to ask you about him because obviously he goes back to LSU with Joe Burrow. They have this rapport, this chemistry, but Chase has really been slumping recently over his last four games or so. And this was after a 7-game start to the year in which he established himself as a real preeminent threat at wide receiver. So I'm just curious how you diagnose what's happening in a receiver who is dropping balls like this as a quarterback, Alex. Like, what are you seeing there in a play like that?
Yeah, I mean, first off, just the play itself, you know, it was a huge play in the game because Burrow had a sack fumble early, and I think they had a 3-and-out. So, like, all of a sudden it was, you know, 2-score game. And they catch the Chargers in, you know, they get Jamar Chase one-on-one with the corner, and he absolutely roasts this corner on a go route. And so he's running up the field, and Burrow, I mean, couldn't throw it any better. You know, we talk about stats all the time, and sometimes they're fair, sometimes they're not. And this one, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen an interception this unlucky. Literally, it was going to be a 60-yard touchdown to Jamar Chase. There's nobody left. I mean, it's going to be a runaway. And Jamar Chase somehow bobbles this and then heaves it over his shoulder directly to the corner that it, you know, was running for his life to stop a touchdown, and somehow the ball fell into his lap. Like, it was such a crazy turn of events again. And it goes down as an interception for Joe Burrow.
The disgust in your voice. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes no sense. I think there's a lot going into the Jamar Chase thing. I mean, the interception was incredibly unlucky, but I think what we have seen is, yeah, this young kid burst on the scene and it showed such big play potential. Well, pretty quickly, defenses are going to step up and say, you know what, we're not going to let this guy make big plays against us anymore. So he's seen a lot of double coverage. He's seen a lot of split safeties, a safety over the top, leading his way, helping him with the corner. So he's not getting as many chances. And that's something that he's, you know, him and this offense are going to have to deal with. I don't think there's any surprise that over the last 5 weeks, Jamar Chase's production has fallen off, but Joe Mixon has run the ball really well because there's an extra safety outside the box. T. Higgins' numbers have gone up. Tyler Boyd's numbers have gone up. So it's not necessarily fair to look at it that Jamar Chase maybe is not playing as well. I think he's getting a ton of attention. And I think the other guys on this Bengals offense have reaped the benefits of that.
I got to get to why I really summoned you to your microphone today, Alex, because we've talked about all these quarterbacks out of the 2020 NFL draft class. That's all well and good. But I need to ask you about your alma mater here. Let's get to the real brass tacks of this weekend, because your Utah Utes, dude, boat raced Oregon on Saturday for the second time in 3 weeks. They win the Pac-12 title. They're going to go get Ohio State in their first Rose Bowl ever. So I just want to give you the opportunity here. We like to have fun with you, Alex Smith, but go ahead and pound your chest. Tell me how you really feel about this.
I would love to pound my chest. Man, I was so nervous on Friday night because we had just beat Oregon at Salt Lake. It was this huge game. I mean, a big, big win for the Utes. And I'm thinking there's no way we're going to be able to do it again 2 weeks later. You know, it's just not going to happen. And it would go to Vegas and repeat performance, just really, really dominant, especially up front on both sides of the ball. And, I'm so happy for Coach Witt and the entire team. They've been through some crazy adversity this year, this past year, and lost two members of the team, tragically. But to take this, despite that, and I think really building off of it, if that makes any sense. But to take this program to a level it's never been. This is crazy, Pablo. The Utah Utes are going to the Rose Bowl, the granddaddy of them all. This was a team, when I grew up, they were in the WAC, and they had to play at 10 p.m. at night to get on TV, okay? And then, when I played there, they had just graduated to the Mountain West, which was a smidge above it. And, you're constantly the underdog. You're constantly never good enough. And, they make the jump to the Pac-12, and they've been competitive at times, but they had never been able to get over that hump. And so for this year, I know it's a bit of a down year for the Pac-12 in general, but for them, I think to go get the title is just absolutely amazing. I still gotta pinch myself. I'm not sure. I believe that is real. And then we're going to be playing Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. Absolutely unbelievable. I appreciate the shout out and the shine.
Well, I appreciate you, Alex Smith, for when you go and crash the Rose Bowl parade. Alex Smith from the WAC to ESPN Daily. Thank you for taking the time, as always.
Pablo, thanks, man.
All right, coming up, Lewis Riddick joins us to preview not just the biggest Monday Night Football game of the entire season, but the best game of the whole year.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Lewis Riddick, where are you right now, man?
I'm in downtown Buffalo. Hey, listen, it's cold, for real cold, like for real. So we're going to have to bundle up tomorrow, bro, that's for sure. I can't stand it, Pablo. I cannot stand the cold.
So what you're saying is that this game tomorrow, you wouldn't fare particularly well at it, Lewis. And what this game is, let's just be honest here at the very top, right? This feels like the most important football game of the whole year so far. So what is actually on the line here to you?
Yeah, I mean, this is, here at week 13, with New England sitting back on top after a year where, they got swept for the first time in Bill's tenure. And them ascending and, stringing off all the – reeling off all the wins that they want, reeled off, six in a row. And with basically the last time we really saw Buffalo, in a big-time game, which was against Kansas City, they have been – they've alternated wins and losses every time, every week, every subsequent week. So I think right now we're trying to find out, what is real here? Is this run by New England real? Is Buffalo going to try to get things, the Buffalo we saw against New Orleans, is that the Buffalo that really is going to, show up for the rest of the year? Winning the AFC East is huge. Obviously, winning your division is huge. So this is a litmus test for them both, for both teams, with a super, super charged atmosphere and fan base. I'm telling you, it's going to be just ridiculously insane over there tomorrow night. And with a lot on the line, teams that know each other, one team wanted to be the new king. The old king is saying, we're back. That's awesome, man. I mean, that Monday night, that's awesome.
No, I mean, Lewis, so much at both extremes are on the line here, but you mentioned the old king and perhaps the future king, Bill Belichick. I mean, you spoke to him, what, today? Yeah. What's the mood that he has going on right now? What'd you learn from your former coach?
You know how Steph Curry says, you know, he always tweets before they play basketball games, lock in? Bill is locked in. That's how he was on this Zoom call. He's locked in. And when he's locked in, he's not much for small talk. He's all about the business, about the facts, about what, you know, needs to be done. Although he's always very insightful, you know, if you read between the lines. And the guy actually has a great personality that can tell some funny jokes, but he wasn't about no jokes tonight. I think between over the past 24 hours of talking to both staffs and both players, I think everybody knows what kind of game this is going to be and what it's going to take to win this game, especially with so much on the line. And you know what happens when all those things start kind of coming down on you, when you get tired and you're cold and the hits hurt even more and all, it really comes down to mentally, can you take yourself to a place that the other team can't? Or would you just kind of like in some way, shape or form go, you know what, that third down ain't that damn important. I'm going to get over there to the heater or I want to get on the bus. And that's how New England has always won, man. These guys are like SEAL Team 6. That's how they run this organization. They want the toughest of the tough. And last year was an aberration, a blip on the screen, because I think they're back, Pablo.
Well, let's talk. Well, Lewis, look, you have been bullish on the Patriots. You are our Patriots correspondent, basically.
It almost seems like I'm a part of the damn fan club or something. It's weird.
But listen, you have been proven correct. As you said, 6 straight wins. Mac Jones is 5-0 on the road. But you mentioned how there is this psychological aspect to the chess match. And the psychological aspect, the mental, the intangible, that's where the Josh Allen question tends to recur. So last year, that you alluded to, that was a 38-9 blowout by the Buffalo Bills of Bill Belichick and the Patriots. I know the Patriots played a ton of zone in that game. That was the year that Josh Allen became the runner-up in the MVP voting. This game, though, it sounds like you're expecting something different from both parties, including the Josh Allen, who, by the way, has struggled mightily in losses to the Jaguars and the Colts in those alternating losses in November.
I am, for basically one reason. And that's because New England has much better players this year than they had last year. It's as simple as that. Mm. They have much better players across the board. They're much better on the defensive line. They're much smarter. And when they're healthy, they're much better on that linebacker. In the secondary, they're playing strong, but they are, you're right. They are playing, hell, they're the number one scoring defense in the NFL. So I don't really know what else there is to say about it. So, and then offensively, yeah, they're much more efficient now. They have got a running game that will knock your teeth out. So Buffalo's up against it. Buffalo's going to have their will tested. Josh Allen is going to have to, dare I say, for a guy who's as talented as him, he's going to have to almost dial it back to the point where he has to play more of a thinking man's game. And that's not to say that he doesn't, but meaning just take care of the ball. It's okay to punt. It's okay to play field position. Be smart where you throw the football, into what quadrants of the field we're talking about, especially if you're throwing it into the wind. This is going to be a thinking man's game and a tough guy's game. It's going to be a great test for both teams. I think we know New England is kind of built for that because that's how Bill has built his program for 20 plus years.
Yes.
Simon Cleveland. And Sean McDermott is trying to build his that way. And their players expect to rise to the occasion. They've all said it to a man. Every single guy we've talked to say, look, we know what's up. We know what's coming. We know what this is going to take. And that's why when you talk to him and I'm literally sitting there, like I start sweating and getting goosebumps and sweating going, this is going to be for real. And this isn't me just hyping up Monday Night Football. This is
the game of the year, man. I can tell.
This is the game of the year. And you know, I don't know if you've ever been up here for a game.
I've been. Never. I too, Lewis. I'm terrified of the conditions up there.
Yeah. Well, you got to get up here for a game, man. I've been coming up here since 1980 when my brother was drafted by Buffalo back in the days when they stunk, and then they got good right as he was retiring. So this place, it doesn't get any better than this place. For a game. These fans are crazy, man, in a good way. And with it being the Patriots, it's just the storylines are, we have so much stuff, man, that we can get into in this game.
I know.
That we won't be able to get it all because the game's going to just sell itself. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Lewis, you mentioned like the number one scoring defense. And oh, by the way, they are up against the number two scoring defense, right? And so how hard is that going to be for this Bills defense against that machine that the Patriots offense currently is?
Yeah, I think for Buffalo, first and foremost, they have to, the number one thing they have to do is answer the physical challenge, okay? To really get this team where you want them, meaning New England, you have to take away, or I don't think you'll take away their physicality, but you have to match it blow for blow to where then now you're putting Mac in situations that for a young quarterback that they're still allowing this offense to grow and evolve. He has to be the one who wins the game. He has to do something spectacular that maybe he's not equipped to do yet because of where he's at in his maturation process. Mac's ready though. Talking to him tonight, what a great kid. Like, and literally I say kid because he looks so young and he has like this, this boyish laugh to him. And he tells us stories about, you know, his fifth grade teacher who he still texts every week. But he's, but at the same time, when you start talking to him about the X's and O's and the importance of this game, you see that smile go away. His brow, his, you know, his forehead and his eyebrows get that frown to him. And then it's locked in. Then the Patriot way.
No, that was that. Then the small talk goes away, right. It sounds like. Then he begins to sound like the guy who happens to be coaching him.
And it's just like, man, they've got him trained good already.
So, Lewis, I have to ask you at the very end here. I mean, we're talking about players from Alabama. We're talking about the question of inevitability. We're talking about guys who coached you. And so I have to ask you about Nick Saban, man, and what we saw from him this weekend. Because his Alabama team blows out Georgia 41-24 on Saturday night to win the SEC championship game, yeah, taking over as the top seeded team in the college football playoff. I'm just curious how you would describe what you saw in that one.
Oh, that's a great question. And you know what? I would describe it like this. Nick heard the noise, the doubts. Oh, Georgia has the best defense of all time. Their front seven's unblockable. They'll destroy everybody. You can't move the ball. It's impossible. Bama has no chance. He heard all that. He said it, right? He said, you know, usually the rat poison that you guys put out there is bad.
That's right.
This week it was yummy, I think he said.
But the rat poison that you put out there this week was yummy.
That's what he's talking about. He heard that. He was like, you know, it's almost like Denzel in Training Day, where, you know, that scene where he's looking around, you think you can do this to me? You know, he was like, you think you can say this about me? He's like, you bleepity bleeps will be playing basketball in Pelican Bay when I'm done with you. That's what he was kind of like. I could just picture him watching that scene during the week and going, that's exactly how I feel about this week coming up. And that's what he did. And Nick had this look, man, on his face in his post-game press conference where he was just sitting like he was so calm. Just like...
Yes. Lewis, to continue the Denzel monologue from Training Day, it was both him and Belichick saying, right? I run shit around here.
That's right.
You just live here.
That's right. That's this. Yeah, that's the same scene. Exactly.
Yes, King Kong ain't got shit on me, Lewis, is the presiding message from that coaching tree.
Somebody has to make a meme and put Nick's face on it or something for that thing right there.
Lewis Riddick, I don't think we're improving on making Nick Saban into Alonzo Harris. So I look forward to listening and watching you call one of the most beautifully painful games I think we're going to have remembered in a long time.
No doubt. No doubt. This is why you want to call games. Monday night, these two teams, this coach, these franchises. Shit, man, I'm just sitting around waiting to put my suit on so I can get over to the stadium.
Make sure to pack some extra layers while you do that.
Done already.
Thanks, Lewis.
You got it.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.